Thanks for coming back the week after Easter. Applause for you guys. Good to see y'all. Thanks for coming. I want to ask you to, I want to compare two commodities that all of you have, and I want you to tell me which one is more valuable than the other. And this is the old Sesame Street. One of these things is not like the other. One of these things doesn't belong. Do you guys remember that? Come on. Am I the only one? I need to sing the song for you? Yeah, you'd like that, wouldn't you? Y'all are playing dumb just to make me sing. Two commodities that everybody has in some capacity. One of them is not endless, but typically it's something that we start off with our life with a little bit of, or maybe none of. And as life goes on, we add more and more. And it fluctuates, our quantity, this commodity, it fluctuates, it goes up and down, but for most people, if they take care of it, if they live responsibly, they may die with more of it than they ever had at any point in their life. It just continually moves up, or at the very least, it moves up through most of our life. The other commodity is something that we start off our life with more of at the beginning than we will ever have at any other point later on. And we live our lives in perpetual depletion of this commodity until the day we die and we have none of it left. Which of those two would you say is the more valuable? Both of them valuable, both of them necessary. But one of them we possess in many cases in ever-increasing measure, and one of them we possess in ever-decreasing measure. I can tell you what our minds say. Our minds typically would say, well, clearly it's the latter. The one that we continuously run out of and we can't get more, that's the one that's more valuable. Supply and demand, right? Supply is decreasing. But our society, if you look at our society says we clearly value the former. We have invented all kinds of ways to help budget and manage that first commodity. You can go to school and get degrees. You can build careers. We take workshops and seminars and classes and read books. We make a hobby out of it. We make a profession out of it. How do we balance and manage our money? And if we're good at it, we'll have more in our 40s than we had in our 30s. We'll have more in our 50s than we had in our 40s. If you have kids, when they finally leave the house and get out of college, you'll have more for sure after that. And depending on how savvy of an investor you are, you may have more when you die than at any other point in your life. And you just watch TV, watch commercials, man, investors, day trading, stock markets, degrees, companies, pursuits. As a society, we spend lots and lots of time learning to manage and budget that very important commodity. It pales in comparison to how much time we spend learning to budget our time, doesn't it? Time keeps on ticking. Time, the commodity that today I had less of than I had yesterday, and this week less than I did a week ago, and this year a year less than I had. And I don't know how much I've got. I don't know how much is in my bank. It's an unknown. I just know I have less, and tomorrow I'll have less, and next week I'll have less, and next year I'll have a year less. On one of these, we measure with kind of the charts and graphs where you see a line. And maybe it's up and down. We have, gains and losses in a season. But the money, in a large part, continues to go up. The other one we measure with an hourglass and sand that just trickles. And it's ever so slow, but it only goes one way. And when it's out, it's out. Which is more valuable to us as a society? Which is more valuable to us as individuals? I think all of us know time is more valuable. in our society where money is plentiful, we would much rather write a check to a charity or to a church or to an organization or to a need than we would sacrifice an hour or two or three. We'd much rather, it's easier to give money sometimes than it is to give time. Time is so precious, and there's so many demands on it. So today we're going to talk about balancing time. It's going to lead us, kind of a first conversation in five over the next. We're going to do five in 6 weeks. We've got a guest in the middle there that's going to share some mission testimony with us. But five of the next 6 weeks, we're going to talk about this that you see on the screen, the balancing act, managing faith, life, and family in our busy society. Balancing act, juggling, keeping all the bowling pins up in the air at one time, not letting them hit the ground. Anytime I think about family or I think about wisdom, I think about balance, I think about the book of Proverbs. And so it's not going to be the only place that we consider, but it's going to be where we spend most of our time over the next 4 or 5 weeks. So if you have a Bible and you want to turn to Proverbs, I would invite you to do so. Before we jump in, I want to give you a couple of ground rules. We've done some Proverbs series in the past, but it's been years back. We've been working on survey data. I didn't share this with the earlier congregation. I forgot. We've been working on survey data and are going to be sharing some of those, you know, findings and information and moving forward over the next 6 to 9 months. But the survey data, what it revealed to us is here at UBC, roughly 40% of the people that filled out a survey in some form or capacity, 40% have been at this church less than 5 years. Half of that 40%, 20%, have been at this church 2 years or less. Any of you old-timers look around and you think, man, I hardly know anybody here anymore. All of you guys that have come to our church in the last year or two, there's never been a better time to get plugged in and assimilate into the life of our church. It's the nature of our community, right? It's the nature of, you know, flux in the space industry and flux in the oil and gas industry, and we live in a transient community anyways. But I want to give you a couple of ground rules, because the last time we talked about Proverbs, chances are 40% of you weren't here. So, which is, it's a good problem to have. Ground rules. First of all, when we go to Proverbs, Proverbs, more than any other book in the Bible, is episodic. What I mean by that is we take great care to interpret the Bible in context. And so whenever I craft textual sermons, biblical sermons, we're normally reading through half a chapter or a whole chapter on a given Sunday, and we may do a series over an entire book. That's because the context of every verse is a paragraph, and the context of every paragraph is the section, and the context of every section is the book it's in. And we don't read contextually in our society much. We like to read fortune cookie Bible study. We like to go find a verse that's just kind of a little quip or a nugget or something we can put on a t-shirt or a poster that makes us feel good. And when we do that and we don't consider context, we can kind of make the Bible say whatever we want. And normally we do with good intentions, but still, not God's intention. I say all that to say, Proverbs is the one place that begs of you to do that. It asks you to take one and put it on a t-shirt or poster. Take one verse and tack it up on your mirror when you're getting ready in the morning. It asks you to do that because the type of literature it represents is that. It's proverbial. It's wisdom related. And that doesn't mean that there's not structure, but the context of Proverbs really is not the chapter or the section. The context of Proverbs is the whole book. And it addresses themes for life just in scattershot. And so what we'll do in this series is we'll look at themes and where they crop up all over the book instead of reading all of chapter 1 or all of chapter 2, etc. Case in point today, we're going to look at the themes of diligence and laziness as a couple of examples. So I want to let you know it'll look a little bit different than other series that we have done. The second rule, and this is really important matter for interpreting, every book in the Bible is its own kind of literature, its own genre. And just like in our society, if you go to Barnes & Noble and you browse the mystery section or you browse the nonfiction section, you browse the cookbooks, you go to biographies, you go to computer coding, you go to, you know, any section in there, all these different types of literatures have, they have their own rules and guidelines for reading them. You read an autobiography maybe differently than you do a biography of somebody that's dead. You certainly read a biography differently than you do a newspaper. You read a newspaper different than you do a comic book. You read a comic book different than you do the instruction manual for your new cell phone. You read those differently than you do a fiction novel, even if it's a sci-fi. Different genres have different rules, and it's the same in the Bible. The problem is we do it in our context without thinking because we just get it. We grow up in our culture and we get it. When we go to biblical types and genres, sometimes those are very foreign to us, and we have to be reminded of what types of literature we're dealing with. You've got laws, you've got narrative, you've got poetry, you've got prophecy, you've got letters, you've got apocalyptic literature. We just came out of Revelation. They all kind of have their own systems of interpreting. And wisdom literature of the Old Testament is one of the most unique and one of the most different. There are a few places you can go. Maybe the closest to common today would be the self-help section of your bookstore. It's one that we kind of frown upon, but yet Job and Proverbs and Ecclesiastes fit into that niche. Proverbs is proverbial. It is observations made by wise people over lengthy lives. They watch, they observe, they pay attention, they give consideration to what typically works, how to live a good life, how to live an ordered life. I compare Proverbs to Genesis 1 in that Genesis 1 illustrates to us the order that God lays over the physical world. And Proverbs illustrates the order that God lays over the social world. That God, just the same as God created the sun to rise and set and rise again and set the next day and the moon to go through its phases and, you know, the seasons to take place. There's order in physical creation. God created the social world so that good deeds bring good consequences and bad deeds bring bad consequences. I probably could say that better. Good deeds bring rewards, bad deeds bring consequences, etc. But also, just like the physical world is corrupted because of humans' sinfulness, the social world is also corrupted by mankind's sinfulness. This is the book of Job. Why do good things happen to bad people? Why do bad things happen to good people? The passage in Ecclesiastes that we read earlier. Why is it sometimes that the righteous get what the wicked deserve and the wicked get what the righteous deserve? The order has been chaotified. Man. The order has been made chaotic because of mankind's sinfulness. And so keep that in mind. What that means when we come to Proverbs is observations about God's social order and what generally works. Proverbs are not promises from God. Okay? That's very important. Proverbs are not guarantees. They're not promises. Proverbial wisdom doesn't work that way. Now, elsewhere in the Bible, God makes promises. He says, you know, I will never leave you or forsake you. That's a promise. When Proverbs says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when they grow old, they will not depart from it, that is not a promise from God. All right? That's proverbial wisdom. It means the overwhelming majority of the time, this is how things work. Today we're going to look at hard work and laziness. The overwhelming majority of the time, the one that works hard, diligent, ends up being productive and fruitful and successful, and the one that's lazy and sits around and does nothing, slothful, is not. But all of you can think of exceptions to the proverb, right? All of us. I mean, Hollywood is really good, or the paparazzi media is really good about illustrating to us people that don't do anything, that don't work. They just, you know, are handed everything from a wealthy family, and they live their life, and they don't have to work hard. It also tells us tragic stories of people that work hard and faithful and diligently, and then all of a sudden something random, inexplicable happens. But those are the exceptions to the rule. General wisdom is what Proverbs offers us. So keep those two thoughts in mind as we go and consider what it has to say about balancing hard work and quality time with people that we love. You realize hard work is a good thing. But let's consider some what Proverbs has to say. It gives us three examples. Chapter 6 is where I'm going to begin. Let me get my notes kind of arranged here. Chapter 6, verse 6 through 8. One of my favorites in the book. It says, go to the ant, you sluggard. It's a word we don't use often enough in English, do we? Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler. Yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. It's a proverb about hard work versus laziness or sluggardliness. Chapter 28, verse 19. Those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies will have their fill of poverty. And also consider Proverbs 31, the virtuous woman section. We could read this entire passage. We could probably build a sermon series, a worship series around this whole section. But in considering what Proverbs has to say about the virtuous woman, notice the work ethic that is inherent within this description. It says, she selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it is still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls. She considers a field and buys it. She's very entrepreneurial. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard, starts a business. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers, making clothes for her family. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. And you could read on and on and on. Man, for a patriarchal society where women didn't really work outside the home, that's kind of robust, isn't it? That's a robust description. She feeds her family, clothes her family. She does things to gain income. She takes her money and invests it. She buys a field. She starts a business. Oh, by the way, she also extends her heart and her life and her arms to the poor and the needy and gives to those. Man. Proverbs was onto something, maybe. Hard work. Hard work. We could go find 10 other passages in Proverbs easily that speaks about this note of diligence. And these first 2 points today, you guys are going to think, I'm insulting your intelligence. Please, please don't think that I am. But it's important for us to get where we're going, because we're talking about balance today. And the first thing that we need to consider is this. There's obviously value and purpose in hard work. The Bible acknowledges it. Proverbs acknowledges it. We don't have to be told that. Especially in our society, we're more of a workaholic society than we are a sluggardly society. So we don't have to be told this, but it's worth pointing out, nevertheless. Diligence is the proverbial word, and it's valued not only in biblical proverbs, but also in worldly proverbs. To be creators and workers is part of our very God-given identity. Created Adam, put him in the garden, said, tend to the garden, name the animals. He's ready to flood the earth. He went to Noah, said, Noah, build a big boat. The sons of Adam, the sons of Noah, we had the first farmers, the first shepherds, the first musicians, the first metal workers. All throughout Genesis 1 through 11, God creates in Genesis 1, his image stamped on us is that we work and build and create and sing and paint, and that we're creators like God. Here is the caveat. The caveat is that we're also relational beings like God. Every one of those stories where people are building and creating is also brothers killing brothers and sons embarrassing and disrespecting their father and husbands and wives sinning against one another and sinning against God. They're all relational beings. And so herein lies the challenge with balance, is that hard work is valued and purposeful, and we get that, but so are relationships. And sometimes we get this really out of whack. For family well-being, we have to discover how to make sure that hard work and quality time with our families is balanced. Now let me back up and give you a qualifying definition of family. Because anytime we talk about family up here, some people define that in their own mind as family is mom and dad and two kids and a dog at home. Family is whatever the little stick figures are that people have on the back of their cars. And sometimes they're zombies, and sometimes they're Star Wars guys. Sometimes they're just stick figures. That's family. When we at UBC talk about family, I want you to understand every person here has family. Every person has family. And we have lots of different pictures of what family looks like. Family is singles, and they're blood relatives, but sometimes they're close friends and roommates. Family is widows and widowers adapting to life now that their spouses are no longer with them, and they walk through that with other widows and widowers that become family for them. Family are husbands and wives that don't have kids, that can't have kids, and they bring friends in around them or extended family. Family. Family is small groups in your church. Family is what we are as a church. And so I don't want anybody, when we say family, to think, well, I'm not your typical suburban nuclear family, so this doesn't count. Family is all those people that are significant relationships in your life. And it's just as easy for you to push friends away because you give too much time to your calendar and your schedule and your work. Just as easy to push friends away as it is to push husbands or wives away or push kids away. Family, relationships that illustrate one of the ways in which you are the image of God. Okay? Value and purpose and hard work. Here's this, the Bible says this and we get it. It's obvious. Consider some of the other proverbs that could have been in the Bible but weren't. Some people from our own context. Thomas Edison, the well-known inventor, said, "Opportunity is missed by most because it is dressed in overalls and looks like work." Opportunity missed because it requires work. Confucius, "Choose a job you love and you will never have to work a day in your life." That's the ancient Far East. You know what? I would add to that, and I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. For those of you guys still planning careers, we prayed together in groups in the early service, and I prayed with four girls all in high school and asked what their prayer requests are, and every one of them to a fault said, college applications. I don't know what my major's going to be. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. It's a concern. Choose a job you love and you'll never have to work a day in your life. But I would add to that, because sometimes in every job there are things we don't love. And sometimes we don't get to choose our job. And so I would add to that, choose a job you love and you'll never have to work a day in your life. Learn to love the job you have in as much as you can. I cannot tell you how many times I find myself coveting all of you that don't work for a church. Yeah, envious a little bit. But I love my job. I love what I do. And, you know, for as many days as I would love to quit and go do something else, there are far, far more days that I can't imagine going and doing anything else. It's learning to love your job, learning to love your work, and that's hard to do, but it's a choice you can make, right? You can. A couple more. Arthur Conan Doyle, the author of the Sherlock Holmes stories and novels, says, "I never remember feeling tired by work, though idleness exhausts me completely." Do you ever sleep in so long that you're just groggy all day? That's what I think of when I read that quote. And one more on the subject of work. Voltaire, often believed to be an atheist. I'm amazed how many of Voltaire's writings and sayings they resonate with me as a Christian. He's believed to be an atheist because he was an enemy of the church in an age in which the church was really pretty corrupt. He says, "Work saves us from three great evils: boredom, vice, and need." Work is valuable. That's not news flash to any of you, I trust. Nor is the notion that laziness is a bad thing. But Proverbs has a lot to say about that. Consider these. Chapter 19, verse 15. "Laziness brings on deep sleep, and the shiftless man goes hungry." Chapter 20, verse 4. "Sluggards do not plow in season, so at harvest time they look, but find nothing." I don't want to do the work beforehand. I don't want to study for the test. And so then I'm bewildered at why I made an F on the test. It's an agrarian society in the Bible, but for those of you guys that are in school, that's your planting and harvesting. It's opening books and reading and studying. Chapter 22, the sluggard says, "There's a lion outside. I'll be murdered in the streets." I love this. Here's why. Because sometimes laziness is born out of just laziness, but really, laziness is one of those, not working is one of those qualities that can really be precipitated by depression or loneliness. It can be precipitated by paranoia or worry or fear. we just call it all laziness, and we think it's just, well, you just don't work. But a lot of people, man, they don't, because they're paralyzed by other factors in their lives. And this verse is really speaks to the one of paranoia and fear. I don't want to go work. I don't want to go outside. I don't want to try something new. I don't want to invest in something new because I'm worried what might happen. The sluggard says, oh, there's a lion outside, so I ain't going outside. I don't think there were a lot of lions in the ancient Near East when the proverb writer was writing. That'd be like me saying, I don't want to go to church today. There's a lion outside. Not a lot of lions around Houston, but it speaks well to the issue. Fourth and finally on this subject in Proverbs, chapter 24. I went past the field of a sluggard, past the vineyard of someone who has no sense or who lacks judgment. Thorns had come up everywhere. The ground was covered with weeds, and the stone wall was in ruins. I applied my heart to what I observed and learned a lesson from what I saw. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a bandit, and scarcity like an armed man. That proverb is worth qualifying, because the context of Proverbs is the Bible, and a lot of times we'll take rest and not do it at all. We'll come back around to Sabbath here in a minute. But in the proverbial context, it's speaking about slothfulness, sluggardliness, laziness, the absence of work. Second point, again, somewhat commonsensical. You didn't come to church to be told things you already knew. Laziness offers no value or purpose. There you have it. It's as bright as I can be today. Proverbs is pretty adamant here as well. In no society is laziness respected, mainly because it voids one of productivity, not only for yourself, but in a society where relationships matter, we don't exist productively for our families or for our communities. And those are things that are important. Lots of, you know, again, this is not just the biblical Proverbs that acknowledge this, but so does our society and societies throughout the history of the world. What do we got? Samuel Johnson. Tell me, this could be in the book of Proverbs. Nothing will be attempted at all. No, nothing will be attempted if all possible objections must first be overcome. That's that lion proverb all over again, isn't it? Nothing will be attempted if all possible objections must first be overcome. Next, Ben Franklin says, laziness travels so slowly that poverty soon overtakes him. That's that last proverb we read. These guys are brilliant, but all they're doing is plagiarizing Proverbs. They're not plagiarizing Proverbs. What they're doing is the same thing the writer of Proverbs did. It's over life, it's observation, it's seeing what works and passing that on to future generations. Jane Austen, I got a nice message from a church member that told me I was very metrosexual for quoting Jane Austen in church. thank you. Jane Austen and Emma, she said, there are people who the more you do for them, the less they will do for themselves. The more you do for them, the less they will do for themselves. And then finally, Charles Dickens. I almost skipped this one because I wasn't real crazy about the word pimpled. But I decided to go with it because it illustrates to us how we so often think of laziness as a physical thing, and yet it illustrates how laziness really can be a mental thing too. Minds, like bodies, will often fall into a pimpled, ill-conditioned state from mere excess of comfort. Ladies and gentlemen, that is where we live. The state of mere excess of comfort is where we live. And we have to take care that our minds do not come pimpled and ill-conditioned as a result of it. In a later message, we're going to talk about conversation and how there needs to be a healthy balance between water cooler talk over the Spurs getting beat last night, talking about whatever TV show you happen to be stuck on, Stranger Things for me, or whatever you're on right now, The Blacklist, I'm behind, and talking about things of substance, talking about things of purpose and weightiness. Part of the reason why we don't do that is it's hard. Having conversations, reading books that cause us to think outside the box, strengthening, disciplining our minds, it's important. So we get that work is important, that laziness is bad. But here's what else. Proverbs has a lot to say about relationships, too. Relationships are important. And because Proverbs is written from the context of parents to kids passing on their wisdom, that's a relationship we're really going to give attention to right here. But consider these three Proverbs. Chapter 1, verse 8 and 9. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They will be a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. Next, chapter 3. My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart, for they will prolong your life many years and bring you prosperity. Chapter 4. Listen, my son, accept what I say, and the years of your life will be many. I guide you in the way of wisdom and lead you along straight paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hampered. When you run, you will not stumble. Listen, if all we do is work, 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 and we don't ever invest in those relationships that are important to us, then if we have kids, we certainly won't be training them and guiding them and walking with them. If we have friends that are important to us, we won't be sharing in carrying each other's burdens and helping each other deal with life's trials or sharpening one another as we seek to grow in the Lord. If we're married or if we're dating, if we don't ever talk about substantial, significant things, we just talk about cotton candy kind of conversation, or if all we do is work, work, and that's as much conversation as we get is, how was your day? Meh. How was your day? Meh. And then we move on with our night. It's a balancing act. It's a balancing act. Here's what I think. I think that as a society, when we think of hard work, don't we automatically default to, what, you guys have homework today? You got to get done before tomorrow? What do you have? Anything hard? What's hard? We think of school. We think of tests. We think of star tests coming up. We think of what we've got at work tomorrow. We think of, of yard work or stuff we've got or chores around the house. We think of, we think of all these, we think of hard work, we think of all those things. Would any of you argue with me that maintaining a good relationship with your husband or your wife is hard work? Would anybody argue that keeping a good relationship with your kids, whether they be teenage years, whether they be younger, whether they be older, that keeping that relationship healthy and thriving is hard work? Would anybody argue with me that understanding your parents and being respectful to them even when you don't understand is hard work? Anybody argue with me there? No? How about caring for aging parents? It's hard work. Relationships are hard work. But when we talk about hard work, we usually kind of take people, relationships, and put them in a box over here, and we're going to work hard at all these other things. And so here's where I wanted to get to is this whole balancing, this balancing act on my third point this morning. Don't omit family relationships. Whatever you, however you may define family, don't omit family relationships from your definition of hard work. Quality time with people you love is a depleting commodity. It's a depleting commodity. You know what? It wasn't that long ago. I can talk about my kids. Y'all don't tell them I talked about them because they went home with grandparents. But it wasn't that long ago, man. Noah and Sam Lawford were like this. And my oldest in eighth grade is borrowing my clothes. And we turn around and in 4 years, he's going to walk out my door and he's going to go to wherever life takes him next. I have 4 years where the four of us in a house together sharing meals and sharing time every day. I have 4 years and then it's gone. And that sand ain't going back in. Lord willing. You never know how those boomerangs will kind of come back around. But that time, man, it's depleting. It's depleting. In 4 years, he'll be out of the house. I'll still have you guys, again, Lord willing. But I'll still have my job. I'll still have work. But, man, those days at home, I can't get back. I can't get back. Time with your parents as they're aging. Those of you guys that are in that stage of life right now. For all of us that, man, we budget money, budget money, budget money, but we don't really budget time. cancer kind of changes that, doesn't it? All of a sudden, we think differently about budgeting time. Alzheimer's, man, we start thinking differently about budgeting time. Our parents moving into care facilities, we start thinking differently about budgeting time. Why not now, too? Why don't we wait until crisis mode to start budgeting quality time into our very busy lives? Are we as diligent in our relationships as we are our other work pursuits? That's the question for you today, whatever those pursuits might be. Are we as diligent with the people that mean so much to us? I want to give you some thoughts moving into our time of response. I'm going to ask you some questions, but I want to give you some key distinctions because this is important in thinking about how to balance. I'm asking you to balance work, which is important, with relationships, which can be work, but it's also important. And you know what? I didn't even read. We skipped Exodus because the Bible has this whole theme of Sabbath, that rest is important because God worked, created for 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested. That rest is important. We're not made to work the grind and never ending. And so rest is important. It's balancing these things. There you go. 6 days you shall labor. On the seventh you shall rest. Even during the plowing season and harvest, you must rest. And so here's some distinctions for you. First of all, laziness is not the same thing as rest. Rest is not the same thing as laziness. I think in our society, we almost feel like we have to apologize to take a day off, to use our vacation days. You know, that's a Gen Xer thing. There's never been a generation that's turned back in or wasted more vacation days than those of you guys that are Generation X, younger than me. They're just working right through them. We ain't got time for vacation. Like, we have to apologize for leaving work early to make it to something that's important for a friend or family member. Like, we have to apologize for it. Now look, laziness is a bad thing. And if you're neglecting responsibilities, neglect is a bad thing, irresponsibility is a bad thing, all those are bad things. This is not in favor of laziness. It's saying that rest is built into Scripture on purpose. You shouldn't have to apologize for laying down and taking a nap. You might probably shouldn't do it every day, but secondly, rest is not always the same thing as quality time. And thirdly, quality time is not always the same thing as rest. Sometimes they are the same. My wife and I can go to Galveston and sit in on the beach, take a cooler and a picnic lunch. That is both rest and quality time. All right? When I come home from work and I've been at meetings and meetings, staff meetings, counseling appointments, planning, researching, studying, writing, I've been around people all day and been talking all day, and she wants to know how my day was. What she's asking for is quality time. Me talking more about my job is not quality time for me. Not gonna lie. And there are a lot of those days where I come home at that point, and you know what I need is not quality time. You know what I need? Yeah, I need rest. Sometimes quality time is not the same as rest, and sometimes rest is not the same as quality time. You know what else? Sometimes different people in relationships receive rest and quality time differently. And you need to know not only how you function, but you need to know how the important people in your life function. Anytime my kids want to go out to dinner, I could pick my favorite places to eat, and that they do not consider that quality time. They do not. So, quality time with my kids, we go to places they like, and it becomes quality time for them. It's quality time. It may not be rest. And lastly, leisure may be any of the above, and it's important for us to know which, because we're an entertainment-driven, leisure-laden society. And sometimes, leisure is rest. It's scheduled, it's intentional, it's appropriate. Sometimes leisure is quality time. Sometimes it's quality time. Sometimes leisure is hiding from the people in your life and the responsibilities in your life so you don't have to tend to them. And so you have to decide if 10 hours in one evening binging on Netflix is laziness or rest or quality time for you. Context, context, context. It depends, right? Depends on the day. If it's every day, maybe a problem. Yeah. Leisure can be all of the above. So here's what I want you to think about as we move into our response time this morning. First of all, do I understand what constitutes rest and quality time for the key people in my life? Do I understand what constitutes rest and quality time for me? Do I understand what constitutes it for my kids, for my wife, for my friends? Because there's got to be some give and take. I not only have to look out for myself, but if these really are people I care about and people I'm fostering relationships with, I need to care about them too. And it's a balance. It's a communication thing. What's rest? When do they need rest? I need quality time. Let me communicate with you. But what constitutes it? That's a question you need to know. You need to know that for yourself. And if you don't know that for the people in your life, this is a great conversation to have over lunch. Great conversation to have over lunch. Secondly, am I more prone to overwork or to underwork? Chances are all of us are one or the other. More prone to overwork or more prone to underwork? Are you more prone to workaholism for whatever reasons? Are you more prone to tendencies of laziness for whatever reasons? I tend to be the latter. I tend to be more prone to underwork. And there are lots of reasons why. Stress, depression, challenges, introverted nature, lots of reasons. But I know it. And so I build structure into my life and balance into my life and boundaries into my life to make sure that my tendency doesn't lead into slothfulness or laziness. Maybe that's you. Or maybe your tendency is to overwork and you need to build in boundaries, structure, to make sure you invest quality time in the people you care about and rest that keeps you healthy. What's you're prone to? And then lastly, what are some steps you can commit to today to bring greater balance into your life? Be sure and share them with somebody. What are some steps? Man, if you're a planner, a scheduler, do you schedule quality time with the people in your life, with family in your life, the same way you schedule your work appointments and engagements? Calendar. Maybe put it on the calendar. Schedule it. Maybe it's you have control issues and you just can't let anybody else help. And what you need to do is teach somebody to help or delegate some things out or let some things go so that you free up space and time in your schedule. Maybe it's a laziness factor for you. And you need to set some defined goals and strategies and share them with somebody and ask for accountability and then commit yourself to something new. Look, everybody comes from different personalities and we're wired differently in this regard. And that's a beautiful thing. It's not a bad thing. But we need to work at knowing one another, communicating with one another, and helping each other find balance in hard work, which is from God, and in important relationships, which is from God. And in walking with God.